This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
Good morning, Zoom friends. It's really good to see you. It's wonderful to be at Jikoji, to be together here and there. Thank you all for sitting with us today. I'd like to open our time together with a poem by Wang Wei. It's called Poem Sent to Brothers and Sisters from the Mountains. In the mountains are many companions of the way, sitting Zen, chanting, forming a natural community. But if you gaze far off from city walls, in this direction, all you would see is white clouds. This weekend, the founding mothers of Zen, Bing Boom Boom Bum, met here at Jikoji for a new beginning. It's a new year, every day is a new day, but this was a particularly profound new beginning. The voices of women in Zen we call ourselves bows. Pretty catchy, huh? Over the last few days, we gathered to explore the women's experience in our practice. Not only to talk shop, but more importantly, to honor our matriarchal ancestors and to enact and embody a ritual created for bows and in honor of the women's lineage. Before we give you a taste of our intentions and experiences over the last few days, I want to share that probably the most fulfilling part of this adventure with the voices of women in Zen was the collaborative way that the people who worked on bows had together. And that includes not just this forming, but also women who couldn't be here today, Emmy and Jen and Laura. Our work together naturally formed a community, and we were charged with a deep sense of awe and respect and had tremendous support from Jikoji. Giving vows life was an expression, an exercise, it turns out, and egolessness. I don't think any of us thought that going in. We didn't think about it at all, but that's what happened. The women of this way navigated our steps together, naturally loyal to one another and dedicated to approaching all of our encounters through the eyes of compassion. We were and remain individually and collectively immersed in inseparability. I think I mean we, have always believed it could be like this, together. And now I mean we, have experienced it. I bow deeply to these women at bows. Paula Arai, Carolyn, Judy, Monica, Emmy, Jen. Did I get everybody?
Laura.
Emmy. Who couldn't be with us today. As has been our custom of delightful collaborating, today we are going to share the Dharma talk and briefly introduce you to what we've been doing for the last 4 days. First, I will speak very briefly on the origin of vows and some of our weekend activities. And then our friend Judy is going to be Paula Arai. She's going to speak about the actual ritual that we enacted this morning. You can see the altar is a little different today. This is part of our vows ritual. Monica Reedy will speak about why the women's lineage is important to study for all of us. And finally, Jikoji's guiding teacher, Carolyn Dilley, will speak about vows as an offering. The little seedling of vows emerged when I noticed a few years ago that when I heard the Dharma expressed through women's voices, something in their expression resonated differently, mirroring for me. It was consistent enough that while not causation, it certainly spoke to correlation. I want to tell my brothers, my Dharma brothers, that when you speak about the Dharma, nothing is missing. It's not that anything was missing. It's just my ears on this body heard something differently when some women spoke. Our friend Jiro-san sent me an ideograph. Characters are nyo, and they're translated as thus, as it seems, just as, like, thusness. These are his words. It is the nyo of nyore, thus come, expressing the essential, unspeakable reality experience as formulated in the highly patriarchal Buddhist culture, and it is formed by ideographs, the first character of which is woman, the second character of which is mouth. What a woman says, what comes out of a woman's mouth, is thus. Maybe that's what I was hearing when I noticed the Dharma expressed through women's voices. So vows emerged because I wanted to talk to the other women about practice, about what is the role of this priesthood, about women in Zen. Generally speaking, I wanted to learn from them. Something in this territory of women speaking to other women was asking to be seen, touched, smelled, recognized. I shared this idea with a few of these women and was encouraged. But when I actually mentioned it out loud to Michael Newhall and then later to Angie Boisafan, I was immediately supported, if not gently prodded, maybe not so gently prodded by Mike, to get things going, to make it happen. So I asked these women to help bring vows into being. Each of them lent their voices to the creation of a mission statement, to the creation of the programming we did this weekend, and to this right now. Our program included stories from the matriarchs. It included considering what it is to be a woman in Zen practice. We called them the basket case because we put little koans, a case is another word for koan, in a basket. We pulled them out and we talked about those. And of course, the creation of a ritual by Paula Arai and this committee in honor of the women's lineage, which we formally enacted this morning. And Judy will now speak to this ritual.
These are Paula Arai's words, voices of women in Zen ritual. Through the ages, women have congregated around tables and altars to share their wisdom and empower themselves to respond to the vicissitudes of life with compassion. They needed no one's permission to do so. Many consciously understood and others intuited that communally creating and engaging in rituals is a powerful way to embody values and commitments. In a long line of women, each woman now brings all the wisdom she has gathered in her bones to the ritual as we transmit the teaching through this ritual that's created vows, voices of women in Zen. As the ritual honors and thanks all preceding women, the women who enact the ritual are empowered. The ritual is illuminated by the lustrous historical roots as their contributions traversed India, China, Japan, and into the West, empowering women as they transformed in each cultural milieu. The ritual fills the space in our hearts and community with female Buddhas and enlightened beings. Vows begins with offerings of light, scent, and flowers, each activating vital qualities. Light illuminates the space with wisdom. Incense, or lavender buds, releases the fragrance of compassion. Lotus blossoms herald the womb of enlightenment. Invoking Prajnaparamita, mother of all Buddhas, puts everyone involved with the ritual into the presence of the source of enlightened being, inviting each person to be ever aware and in touch with the Buddha nature that animates all life. By proclaiming out loud in each other's presence, we activate our wise and compassionate nature. In paying homage to our ancestors, we vivify our gratitude to the countless women before us, naming 18 women representatives from India, China, Japan, and US. Reflecting the historical and cultural journey of Buddhist women, we chant homage to them in melodies that transport us to their worlds. We begin with the Indian melody to express homage and gratitude to our Indian mothers. As the Buddhist tradition transformed in the Chinese cultural context, the melody is transposed into a pentatonic scale. The Japanese integrated the Sinified Buddhist practices, so the melody is the same. Indicating the movement into the Western context, the melody is transposed into Western scale. Singing the names of representative women is particularly poignant in our time. Each woman present manifests their agency through their offerings, and having invoked all Buddhist women across time, the jewel net of our interdependent being is highlighted. To recognize that we are all together in this precious womb, each a precious pearl of luminous beauty, we pass the pearl one to another as we see each other deeply with the heart. We are each unique with special qualities and characteristics, and this is our perfection, like the natural pearl we offer around the circle before offering it on the altar table. In doing so, we affirm Dogen's teaching, all the universe is one bright pearl. The arc of the ritual has moved from becoming present with each of our offerings, recognizing we are in a long stream of women from around the world. And seeing the preciousness of our wombs, we now gather in our wisdom and compassion in full blossom, connecting our bodies in the circle of wisdom and compassion in our midst, demonstrating that we are an integral part of the interdependent flow of phenomenal reality. Performing and witnessing this ritual infuses us with determination and strength as we are reminded, renewed, and fortified that we are a circle of independence, interdependence, committed to being vectors of wisdom and compassion in the world.
Hey, everybody. It's so nice to be with you in person. It's been a long time for me. So my part of the program is just to speak about why it's important to study the women ancestors. And so the first and the most obvious reason is because they were there. The names of the women ancestors that we know and chant today are only available to us because of the painstaking effort by a number of contemporary women who have made it their practice to document and honor these women. And I'd like to add that the names exist in the record because there were men in their time that supported them and allowed them to practice. We can be grateful to know their names and to have them here with us today, but they're still at risk of being lost again in the future if we do not choose to speak their names, to learn their stories, and to pass on their teachings to the next generations. Through vows, we aspire to do this work, to continue this work. But as important as this is, it's not the only reason to study the women ancestors. While inequality of any sort is antithetical to Buddha Dharma, and we need to be diligent about not turning away from these issues, there's another reason to study these women that I believe goes deeper than simply acknowledging past discrimination and cultural baggage. So reason number two to study the women ancestors is because we are here. And by we, I mean not just we women, but all of us. Just as each of us are born of a man and a woman, so too our lineage has a matriarchal as well as a patriarchal as lineage. If the whole of the phenomenal universe is the Dharmakaya, the reality body Buddha, then all the individual beings and objects are parts of that whole body. In order for this universe to exist as it is, it requires that each and every individual being or thing fully manifest their uniqueness. To be able to see the perfection of wisdom, the prajnaparamita, expressed through different beings and forms, is to meet ourselves in all of life. To listen deeply to the life experience of those who are different than us is to offer ourselves the opportunity to become more intimate with the vast range of human experience. Likewise, to be completely and uniquely ourselves is to be one with Dharmakaya. Gender, like all forms, is empty, and yet it still matters to our life experience and how we are able to practice. To see it as everything is a mistake, and to see it as nothing is a mistake. Form matters. The conditions of our life matter. They are the Dharma gates that we have available to us, the way we become intimate with the experience of being human. To ignore our differences is to do ourselves and others a disservice. Yet these differences mean nothing in relation to our ability to awaken. If we are to succeed in creating a world that is more just and equitable, it will be not in spite of our differences, but because of them. What we gain by opening ourselves up to ever-widening circles of diversity and inclusion is the delight and the exquisite pain that comes with the ability to witness the inconceivable ways that emptiness manifests as form. To study and honor the women ancestors is just one way to enter into this adventure and to recognize their contribution to the creation of the world we now live in is to acknowledge that they are actually us and we are them.
So it's so good to see you all here on this day. It's been a most powerful and I would say transformative experience to actually embody in the ways that each of us have prajnaparamita, the mother of all Buddhas. So I am speaking from my experience today, my experience of this whole process of vows and working with and playing with the women who are part of this committee, if you will. I haven't found yet a good name for what we are, except women. That'll do. So I would like to address a couple of things that have come up. One is that this, as Pamela mentioned, is an offering. It's an offering to all beings. And the other is that it is rooted in Soto Zen. So that's the name, Vows, Voices of Women in Zen, because that's where we are, and that's where we practice, and that's where we all are. But it's a larger offering than that. It's an offering to any being, any human being who hears it and resonates with it and wants to taste that flavor of embodying it for that person's own self. The inspiration for many women in Zen, including me, is Dogen. And Dogen didn't speak a lot about women in Zen, but one of his early talks, the Raihai Tokuzumi, the embodying by bowing. Embodying enlightenment by bowing, where he specifically begins with, after a little general address, he begins with two women whom he knew of prior to his taking up this form of Buddhism, which became Soto Zen, rooted in Chan Buddhism. Moshan, Mountain was her name, who was an abbot. She had her own practice center and welcomed men and women and enlightened many beings of those who came to see her, according to that, the stories that Dogen heard from Chan. The other one was Myojin, who was a nun also, but not a teacher. She was the director of the guest house of her preceptor's practice community, Yangshan. So those stories are both moving to me, that illustrating that one doesn't have to be a teacher, one in any function of life, when one hears and one wishes to embody wisdom and compassion in this practice lineage of Soto Zen, one can do so. And these women's stories were strong and funny. Like Myojin said, she had visitors all the time because Yangshan was a well-known teacher in southern China. And at one point, 17 monks came to visit the temple. And they were talking about an old koan, famous, the six patriarchs, what moves the wind or the banner, what the flag is flying, what's moving? And then the six patriarchs said, neither the wind nor the banner, but your mind. So she heard through other women in that practice community that that's what these fellows were talking about. And she said, "Oh, those donkeys! Why don't they quit telling these old koan stories? Why don't they come do something different? Why don't they wake up and do something different? Something like that." And so, one of the nuns, who was also in the guest house, told this to with us to these 17 guys who are kind of in a group together. And instead of saying among themselves, well, what does she know? Or where does she get off talking like that about us? Or they're, this is all secondhand, right? But they, somehow their curiosity was piqued, and they were not afraid to listen to a woman. So they asked for an interview with her, and she gave them the interview. And so one of them posed the question, well, this is what we're studying, and we heard that you, you know, say that, you know, that we should move on. So what do you have to say? I mean, they said that respectfully, apparently. And she said, it is neither the wind nor the banner nor your mind that moves. And at that point, all 17 were enlightened or had some kind of awakening experience. So what I feel that what part of what we are doing is to not only remember these women's names, because naming places us in this world, because there's no separation between this world and the Dharmakaya, as Monica brought in, but it has its own characteristic and flavor. And naming, if you wipe people's names out, if you don't remember their names, they're gone. So that's a really big part of what we are doing. And the other part is that can be kind of abstract. It's a name, it's a noun, it just points to, oh yes, there's this and this and this person. But to tell their stories, to tell their stories, and not very many of those stories remain. Scholars like Paula Arai and others are doing very important and, you know, serious work. I know scholars, you go into those archives and it's strange, your eyesight and you're breathing dust from 8 centuries ago. And it, you know, it's hard work being a scholar and really digging in deep to find out things. So those stories, so more stories will come forward. But even more than that, it's for the women who are here now and present now to have the opportunity to tell their stories, to tell their own stories, for each of us, for example, or any of you, as just people to tell your story. This is, for me, a very important way that the Dharma gets transmitted. It's not just people sitting up here talking at people sitting out there. It's for each of us to really know our story, know what our koans are. So, I think Pamela, it was mentioned, yes, that we had this form that we used of what are we interested in here? What are our koans as in Zen practice? As women, but the subtext is all of our koans because we're really quite similar. Men and women, it's only a little genetic twist. And I also feel that this, by bringing forward the other gender, that we also open the space, which Monica alluded to, for genderless people, for people who don't identify as men or women, and all kinds of diversity. We open the space for others, whatever their stories. So those are my thoughts and feelings and that I wanted to share with you from my experience this weekend. But also, what others have said, but I also want to share with you how really joyful and emotionally wonderful it is to share in this way, to be all together in this way. So, and that's something each of us will feel again in our own way, but just as we, you know, love our friends, our partners, our this way of collaborating and working together with our not selves rather than our this is the way I want to do it self, was really deeply nourishing, joyful, fun. We had a lot of fun. We have time for questions before lunch. And if you would like to address a question to any particular person, please address that person. Or if you have a question that you don't have associated with a person, that's fine too. And we'll just sit here a little bit and one of us will take it up. So we encourage your participation because that's what this is all about, embodying our participation. And welcome your thoughts, your questions, or whatever you want to put out here in the circle. Thank you.
I'm very much a novice in our world here. Is this new, or is this common in other areas, other countries, and other traditions, what you are doing?
Brand new.
Or is this new?
Brand new. We just gave birth.
Brand new. Brand new. Oh, just brand new. That's beautiful. I just want to thank you.
I want to add and give, you know, give reverence and appreciation to, there have been groups of women, notably Grace Shearson and others who have started this process. And they researched the women ancestors and they created a chant and they created books and volumes of resources for us. So it didn't start with us, but this iteration and this, what we're bringing forward is brand new.
With the ritual piece, particularly with Paula Arise, the scholars, that's what that whole altar in front of the Buddha altar is.
Yeah.
This is a general question, something that I was wondering about. So I think one of the earlier talks or just in my study, I learned that Shakyamuni Buddha was kind of a radical in inculcating women into the practice and having them and having a space for women and men to practice together. And so, but then I also heard that initially he was reluctant, and then he, I think it was Manjushri that changed his mind, but I might be wrong. But I was wondering if you all have researched that, and why was there this hesitation, and then what led him to change his mind?
Let's be fun to see if we get four opinions. Yeah.
Yes, I will start off, perhaps because I also started Buddha Dharma practice in kind of the Western version of Theravada practice from Southeast Asia, it's called commonly now Insight Vipassana practice. And I studied the sutras a lot, the sutta, not sutras in that language. And that was a koan for me. Well, what was the reluctance of Buddha? And that's, historians do not really, there are speculations and people even write whole books about what, and there are kind of commonsensical reasons. Well, women, could they you know, could they handle the rigors of a forest life? Because they weren't surrounded by walls. You know, they were wandering. They were they built on the tradition of Indian men, holy people, which were always men. And yet there were always lay people who came to the Buddha too. And there were women among those, including queens, and who were very moved by his words, by his truth, the truth of the Dharma. So it's not really clear why except for that. And also you could say conditioned by his culture. So Buddha was also human. Now, he was a man, and he was a man of his time in a certain way, for sure, like we all are still. And the part I would really like to emphasize is that he had his chief disciple and his cousin, Ananda, not Manjushri. Manjushri's later. Ananda was there at the beginning with Buddha. And Ananda came to Buddha and said, "You keep saying that anyone can realize the Dharma, that the Dharma is available to all beings. So why don't you let women practice?" Mm-hmm. And he had to come three times to do that. And he finally, I guess, this is in the suttas, he said yes. So he must have had some kind of light bulb went off, like, okay, yes, why haven't I been? And no one really knows his reasons. And they did not practice together. They also practiced separately. And until to this day, they practice separately. Mm-hmm. And to this day, in Southeast Asia and other places too, men and women have different ways of practice, and they're not equal. So in Theravada practice, the youngest monk has more status in the community than the oldest nun. So it's an inequality that's historic. So thank you for the question.
So I just want to add that we honor in our lineage Ananda, and just to just continue what Carolyn was saying, that it is ongoing. In the West, we've come to practice together, and there's still work to do, but it's fairly equal. But in the rest of the world, there's still a lot of inequality that's shocking to us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Before I start, I want to say I did notice how in Zoom land there have been some folks trying to come in.
Oh, okay.
So after I get to say what I want.
I can only say that.
Okay. I thank you for that, Carolyn, Karen, for raising that question. And that was an unfamiliar story to me of Ananda. And something that really touched me was how Ananda had to persist, how it had to be done a few times, that we can't expect that, okay, I know the right way, I'm gonna make a move towards it, and oh, it didn't work, I'm not gonna try that again. And that is a very important thing for me to hear that. Another thing that arose that I wanted to share is the question that Karen Rose was about Buddha's, the history of Buddha's changing his mind. And I thought, what about me? What was it like for me when I was much younger and it was difficult for me to be accepting of gay people in my community? And then later on in my life, when all of a sudden there were people who were gender fluid, and there was something in me that was like, what is that? I'm not sure. And that's, there's just a lot of juice there for me still to look at that. Where did that come from? Where was it? And for me, that has a, I feel it's an important study for me, much more than me understanding what the Buddha's motivations were. Where have I seen myself or people that I know intimately hung up, and then witness the evolution and be able to share that? Because what I also wanted to mention, and my great gratitude for what you've done this weekend, and I want to encourage all of us to, of course, the stories, the ancient stories are wonderful distillations of knowledge that has come to us, that have been gifted to us. But I think it's really important for us to also notice what we're all doing with one another today. And when stories arise and seeing something beautiful, tell that story.
I can't see
people.
So we can't see people. So Kogan, could you call out some people who would
Zoom?
Have questions?
Yeah, I think I can help a bit.
Susan, Toba.
Thank you so much. You are very inspiring, and I'm so appreciative. There's some feedback. I hear it. I'm very appreciative of what I'm hearing about your collaborative time. And I'm really hoping there's going to be a way to see your altar and see some of the rituals you're doing together. Can that be shown either on the camera now or recorded?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you want to
speak
to that?
I could easily carry that.
Would you? Yes, that would be wonderful. Okay, we're going to tell you a little bit about this, Toba, since you asked. Hogan's going to bring a camera over to the altar. We had a couple of more really large Buddha figures, female Buddhas, on the altar that Paula had brought. So now we're down to two. But you'll see that the process of our ritual this morning was lighting a candle, multiple candles, and offering incense and offering of lotus flowers for the rather obvious metaphor of each of us blooming in the mud. And can you see the altar?
Can you see the altar?
Is that working for you?
I think
it says no.
Hogan, I think you need to tip it down a little bit.
Thank you.
There, keep going.
And then just kind of pan maybe. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
And the other direction.
Other direction.
That's fine. There we go.
There we go.
So now you're seeing some of it, Toba. Yeah. But there is, we did actually videotape, recorded the entire ritual this morning. So at some point, we will share that. And we're happy to share, more as time goes on.
Is that Ananda on the left?
No, that is not Ananda on Buddha's left. That's Carolyn's.
No, Ananda was a man. So that is Prajna Paramita. There are two, and then you have a Prajna Paramita.
No.
Avalokiteshvara. That's
what Monica brought, and I brought it.
Pamela.
Oh, Pamela brought it.
Yeah.
And I brought the Prajna Paramita in the posture of royal ease, with the seated, with the hand on the earth,
with her knee up,
and with her knee up.
Thank you.
Don't direct me more, because I can't tell what I'm doing here.
You're doing fine.
That's good. Yeah.
Thank you, Toba, for your question. That was a good one. This weekend, it was just these mothers enacting this experience so that we would know when other women, and there are women
who expressed interest in participating will come and join us, that we know we have an embodied version of it. We've done it, right? We have walked through a weekend of different exercises together and this ritual together. So we know kind of what it's supposed to look like in our bodies. And yes, of course, the hope is to throw open the doors, which we're terrified of, but yes, throw open the doors and everyone is welcome. And I want to add that we were very honored this morning to have our brothers here at Jikoji bear witness to this ritual. They did not participate, but they showed tremendous respect for the women and by bearing witness. So I want to acknowledge them. Thank you. And yeah, more to come. We don't know what it's going to do exactly, but we are, we're all in, Mariko.
I would like to just build on what Pamela said about on our Jikoji brothers. It's very meaningful to us that this took place at Jikoji, the embodiment of the ritual. And one way we see this going out, everyone is included. Men are not excluded. The women do the ritual, but the men are here. So that will always be the case. It's not going to be a women only come and do the ritual for other women. It will always be for all Sangha.
It's
going to be fast. Okay. So one thing is this great book called Middlesex, if you haven't read that. Mm-hmm. It's a really great book.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Really well. And I also wanted to say, it came to my mind, especially appreciate what you said about naming as a way of remembering. Mm-hmm. Which I can understand better now, somewhat by their great articulation. But one thing is, I wrote before when I was in art school, I had to write, was that it appeared to me, and I'm a parent, and I was right there. In many ways, I changed when the mother was having growing this fetus. I know I changed. I, in some ways, though not physically, I also gave birth. And I think maybe this came maybe because of that experience, is that I felt as though that we are all maternal. Mm-hmm. That we all, in many ways, need to nurture something. Mm-hmm. And in the graduate school, there was this woman, she was Asian, she made 2-inch paintings, and she had a 20 by 20 foot studio. She covered the whole thing with 2-inch paintings. And then I thought, well, then there's these great architects who made these huge, gigantic edifices, as well as an eloquent thought. We all need to nurture something.
Thank you, Todd. We heard the bell and it was very forcefully rung. So I think the tenzo is ready. I also want to acknowledge Rain.
Mm-hmm. Our tenzo.
Yes,
our tenzo.
And also our Fukutan, our honorary woman. Hogan.
Hogan, who nurtured us along with Rain. We were very nurtured. Mm-hmm. And yes. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you all.
Thank you
all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
May I have a
These are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.
There's an announcement we need to make on vaccinations.
Yeah, thanks. Just want to let people know that beginning Wednesday, we're trying to institute that requiring people that come to Jacoji to be boosted in addition to fully vaccinated. Times are changing and time is going on, and this seems to be the right response to the, how things are evolving. I think you may have received an email invitation to send in booster credentials, so please follow up on that. What else? I think I'll make more announcements at the Bowen for lunch for folks that are here.
Now, one other thing I'd like to say about witnessing the ceremony this morning is rarely is the mother of the Buddha, Mahaprajna Paramita, brought into it. And that, to me, also was a huge change to how this ritual came to me, came through me.
Thank you. I want to remind everybody that your dana is important to Jacoji. So please, if you feel an inclination and you want to support Jacoji supporting you and your practice and supporting everyone, there are dana envelopes up in the community room. Please make a donation if you're able.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jacoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jacoji, please visit us on the web at jacoji.org.